Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined by Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
And Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Ed. How are things in Tupelo today?
Things are going great. I got to tell you, Ray, you know, for a couple of years, whenever I would host and have you on, I would have some little statement that went around kind of along with my introduction. And you know what? I just have run out of superlatives for Ray Pritchard. So
I have one.
You do?
Yeah. Ray Pritchard, Elephant Man.
There you go. Elephant That's man. Right. Elephant Man. Maybe a slight explanation is in order.
Go ahead, Fred. Why don't you explain to our listeners where Elephant Man comes from?
Well, we have our story meeting in the morning before, obviously, about an hour and a half before we go on the air. We video conference with
yes.
Ray from his dwelling there out west somewhere.
My secret bunker.
secret in bunker. An unnamed location.
And behind him we see this very, very beautiful painting picture of elephants.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had a
elegant elephants on the wall behind me.
Elegant elephants.
So, try saying that fast five times.
Call them Elephant Man.
There you go.
That'll work.
That works.
Well, folks, now you will not be able to see Ray Pritchard, but if you want to see Fred and I, there is a way for you to do that. You go to Facebook or YouTube, and you type in Today's Issues, and when that pops up, you can click through. And you can watch this show online. The rest of you just have to do it the old-fashioned way and listen to us on the radio. We do have an app, so that's not so old-fashioned. If you want to download the AFR app, just go to the App Store, and you can do that, and you can listen anywhere you have a good connection. You can actually do that on your iPad. If you'd like to listen to us on your computer, you can go to AFR.net, where there's live streaming and podcasts, et cetera. So plenty of ways for you to connect with us as we go about the business of telling you some of the things that are happening in the world from a Christian perspective. So, Fred, why don't you start us off?
Off we go. Well, we are deep into the political reaction to the mass shootings that we talked a lot about yesterday, the one in El Paso on the weekend, and then the one in Dayton, Ohio. And so now it's the politicians saying we must do something to keep these sort of things from happening again. And we certainly applaud thinking about how do we stop these things from happening again. But now they're trying to grapple with, well, what laws can we pass to try to keep this from happening? And to that end, the governor of Ohio this morning, Republican Governor Mike DeWine, stated that amongst the things on his menu that he sees, passing laws requiring background checks for nearly all gun sales and allowing courts to restrict firearms access for people as perceived as threats. Now, that makes a nice one sentence for an opening paragraph in a story, but I think there's a whole lot in that. Background checks for nearly all gun sales and allowing courts to restrict firearms access for people perceived as threats. What does that mean? What would that entail? What does that kind of law look like? And also to that end, South Carolina Republican Senator, well-known Lindsey Graham, said yesterday that he's going to introduce a bill with Senator Richard Blumenthal, the Democrat from Connecticut, that would create a federal grant program to help law enforcement work with mental health professionals to take action when needed, while ensuring robust due process and judicial review, to take action when needed. I mean, what does that mean? Does it mean that a mental health professional who's counseling someone who expresses, he says he has desires to do violent action, are they going to be forced to report that to authorities? Would a pastor who is counseling somebody be forced to report that to authorities? What does that do with HIPAA laws in this country, where you're not supposed to disclose publicly what a patient is feeling, doing, being treated for, all of those sorts of things. So like I say, we're at the front end of, you know, people saying, demanding something must be done. But we were discussing before we went on the air, in the week of 9/11, I remember this, everybody in the country wanted to pass laws to keep that sort of activity never happen again in the United States. But there were people who said that, wait a minute, you're going to start tramping on First Amendment rights. You're going to start tramping on all kinds of rights if you pass, you know, that was the Patriot Act,
yeah.
All those sorts of things. So I think that's where we are right now. We're at the front end saying, okay, maybe we should try this. Maybe we should try that. But then I think there's maybe in the weeks ahead we say, well, wait a minute, this could have this impact that we really don't want. So yeah. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, I'll say this, and Ray, then we'll get you to jump in here too, but I think here's part of the problem. Part of the problem is you have well-meaning people on both sides of the aisle who don't want to see these kinds of tragedies happen. So lawmakers are in D.C., they're in their state capitals, and they are sent there, men and women are sent to political office to fix things that are broken. Mm-hmm. That's the job that we give to them. And boy, when you talk about things that are broken, you're talking about these kinds of tragedies. So you have well-meaning people. Then you have people who are not well-meaning in terms of guns. Mm-hmm. So I put the lefties in this category. These are people who don't like the Second Amendment. They wish there were no guns. They want to take guns away or severely restrict access of even law-abiding Americans to the purchase of guns. Mm-hmm. And part of my problem is I look at some of the laws being suggested by well-meaning people, and I think the people who want to get rid of the Second Amendment are going to use that law as a stepping stone to doing it. Yeah. And when you have mutual suspicion like that, you can't even get good laws passed. Ray, I mean, what do you think? Am I just paranoid?
No, I think that's very likely what's going to happen, that a law that is passed with good intention, somebody in a year or two or three is going to stretch it out and stretch it out far beyond its original intent. So, I mean, we're all sitting here thinking, okay, if 4 days ago or 5 days ago somebody had known about what this fellow in El Paso was going to do.
Okay, we lost Ray. Sometimes those elephants get loose. They trample his connection. So we'll get Ray back. But listen, we're going to continue talking about this issue, and we probably will pick up maybe later in the show even, because this is an issue that is it is not going away, because these kinds of shootings are not going away.
No.
And so there are always going to be calls. Now, here's part of the issue that I have, too, even for the well-meaning suggestions, and that is that, as far as I know, I'm not sure I could name a single one of these shooting incidences that would have been prevented with the laws that are being suggested.
Yes.
Okay. Expanded background checks. Okay, I understand that. Would that have prevented any of these shootings? Even the idea of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
How do you perceive a mental health breakdown before it happens?
Yeah.
So people may legally have access to guns, and they have some sort of psychic breakdown, and they go on a rampage. Could the laws have prevented that?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that in most of these cases that's preventable. So then you say, well, then what's the point of the laws? Okay, when you know, so and people don't want to do nothing. So I'm not sure where these kinds of discussions wind up. We have Ray back. All right, we're still trying to get Ray.
Well, to the point too, you know, what are gun laws, stricter gun laws, going to accomplish? A headline that probably very few people saw yesterday, coming out of the weekend: Chicago police release audio clip as weekend gun violence leaves 7 dead and 46 injured. Now, sadly, you could pretty well write that headline every Monday morning in Chicago.
Yeah.
These are 7 people who lost their lives.
Right.
46 others who were injured because of gun violence there.
Chicago.
Just Chicago this
past
weekend.
We're not talking about New Orleans or Baltimore or some of the other cities.
We know this is happening in Chicago every weekend, but nobody talks about that.
Right.
And then this was an interesting story. This is out of Toronto, Canada. Canada has some of the strictest gun laws in the world. Here was the headline Monday morning in Toronto. 13 people wounded in 11 different shootings in Toronto over holiday weekend. Last weekend was holiday weekend. So there's a country with strict gun laws that are pointed to by many of the leftists in this country, but you still have these stories. Because bad people are going to get guns if they're determined on doing bad things.
Right.
So you've got to work all of that into the equation, and this is where you get through the emotion of the moment and saying what is really going to work or what's really behind what's going on in our culture today.
Well, Ray, we got you back. Before we go, Frank Turek is on the line. We're going to go to him in just a minute. Did you want to finish up what you were saying, Ray?
Yeah, let me just say, Ed and Fred, that I am all for any law that actually could help us catch the bad guys ahead of time. But I think it's one thing to write a law. It's another thing to imagine a situation when it would actually work. Sure, we all wish, I mean, we deeply wish that the guy in El Paso and the guy in Dayton had been arrested, had been turned in before these terrible tragedies happened. But I, Ed, you know, you asked me a couple minutes ago, do I think you're paranoid? I do not. I think any of these red flag laws are ripe for misuse. You can start with this very narrow definition of what a red flag is, but it could be so easily expanded to include a lot of people who really don't intend harm to anybody. They could be used against your political opponents, frankly.
Yes, and boy, I'm glad we've never seen that in our country. So
right.
Well, listen, we will continue to discuss this because as we continue to try to process the two double tragedies that happened in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, and then as we continue to talk about the every weekend tragedies in places like Chicago, Baltimore, Detroit, places like that, we will continue to talk about guns and what we can do to try to limit the catastrophic loss of life in which guns play a part. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll continue to talk about the issue, in other words, because the discussion's not going away. All right, well, we are going to do a little bit of a sharp left turn or right turn, depending on what you think about Frank Turek, whether he's to the left or to the right of us. He's host of Cross Examined, heard Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time, Sundays at 4 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Talk. Each weekend, Frank, welcome to the program once again.
Gentlemen, I have a question about this gun issue.
Yes.
And that is, the country has always had private citizens owning guns. But it seems in recent years we've had more and more of these shootings. Is the availability of guns the issue, or is there something else going on here?
Well, I think I'll speak for myself, and Fred and Ray can speak for themselves, but I think it's clear that we have something else going on. Because one example is that my understanding is down here in the South, Texas, so on and so forth, young men especially used to arrive at school with guns hanging in the back of their pickup trucks. Mm-hmm. Nobody got out with them and tried to shoot people. Mm-hmm. So we've had guns. Lots of people have had guns for centuries here, but the last 50 years maybe, less than that really, now we have this kind of spate of gun violence. I can't remember past Columbine. Maybe Columbine was the first time I recall hearing about these kinds of shootings. So I think there's something else going on. Ray and Fred, what do you guys think?
I would say, you know, I know what Frank is alluding to, and the thing that has changed, I think, is that, and what people don't want to admit to, is that, yes, they would have to admit historically, accurately, that guns have been around for a long time, people carrying guns, but they don't want to admit to evil. That's what our culture has a problem admitting today, that evil stems from the heart.
Yeah.
And I think what has happened over the last 20, 30 years or so is that We have a culture that now gives license to people to express their evil.
Right.
And I think that's where we are.
Ray?
Well, it's true, isn't it? Guns have been around since the beginning, as Frank pointed out. So whatever is going on in America is not caused simply or even mostly by the proliferation of firearms. Something, Frank, doesn't it seem like something has gone wrong inside the heart and soul of our nation that we should have mass shootings at this level, at this moment in time?
Yeah, I think what's happened here is that we've created a culture of nihilism, that there's meaninglessness everywhere because we've fallen away from our founding documents, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, that we're made in the image of God, and that every life is sacred and every person is sacred. But we have not only stopped teaching that, we've yanked it out of our schools. And you can teach the truth that people are made in the image of God without establishing a Christian religion. You can do that because it's really based on our founding documents, that we're endowed by our Creator. And we've gotten away from that. And so everybody now believes in many of our public schools, not everybody, but many believe, well, there's really no meaning to life. We just got here through blind evolution. And, you know, if I want to kill a whole bunch of people, that'll get me... that'll bring me some pleasure by doing that. And some people, I guess, get pleasure by doing that. Well, then why shouldn't I do that? Especially if I want to check out myself. So we've created this culture of nihilism, of meaninglessness, and we wonder why people treat one another as if their lives are meaningless. And I think a big part of the problem is the church has been complicit in this, in the sense that the church has not engaged the culture. The church, since the 1920s, has been pretty much separated from the culture. The church hasn't been involved in evidence or reason, trying to give reasons as to why Christianity is true and to show people why it is really true that there is a God and you're made in His image and we should respect everyone. We don't, you know, we just say have faith. Well, Jesus never said just have faith. Always ready to give an answer for the hope that you have. Trust in what you have good reason to believe. That's what faith is. And so part of the problem is us, that the church for the past 100 years has not really engaged the culture. And we wonder why when we take the godly people out of the culture goes godless. Whose fault is that? It's ours.
Well, Frank, then let me bring up a recent, I guess kind of a recent event, really shook the evangelical world here within the last, I'd say several weeks. This kind of started with an initial announcement from Pastor Joshua Harris, He wrote the book when he was a young man, Why I Kiss Dating Goodbye. Right. His first announcement was, I think, if I have the chronology right, that he and his wife were parting ways. They were splitting up. He had some very significant changes in his life. There was a follow-up text or two. But anyway, it was a public announcement that he was no longer a Christian. And there are all sorts of other rumors floating around about Joshua Harris. Here recently, I think this weekend, Fred?
Past Sunday,
he showed up at a gay pride event. Mm-hmm. He's apologized to the LGBT community for his opposition to same-sex marriage. He no longer believes and apologized for the teaching that marriage is only between a man and a woman. So what in the world is going on? This is a high-profile evangelical who's now left the faith. You're talking about the church and its impact on the culture. How can we impact the culture if we're losing people like this?
Well, here's the interesting thing about it. When you look at it, Ed, and I did a whole program on this this past weekend on the American Family Radio Network. It's on our podcast now. And I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. The I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist podcast. It was pretty much on this entire issue with regard to Joshua Harris, former pastor. And we had to pray for him and his family, obviously. But yeah, he has basically left not only... You know, he wrote the book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye. Well, he kissed his wife goodbye, and apparently he's saying he's kissed Jesus goodbye now. And when I read what he wrote about it, and as I say, I've spent a whole hour on this last podcast, I was shocked that he doesn't say anything about now I think Christianity's false. He doesn't say a word that, well, you know, I got some new evidence and, you know, God doesn't exist or Jesus didn't rise from the dead. It's none of that. It's none of the evidence. It just says he basically treats Christianity like it's a preference. Well, I used to believe it. Now, you know, I kind of prefer these other moral beliefs. And it seems, as you just pointed out, Ed, that now he's apologizing to the LGBTQ plus community, and he goes to one of these pride events over the weekend, and he's changing his moral perspective. And since he's changed his moral perspective, he's given up on Christianity, which tells me, was Christianity just a preference for him? And let's not even debate the merits of what he's doing in terms of is homosexuality right or wrong. You know, obviously we all stand with Jesus on this. But let's just set that aside for a second and just point out that he's changing his moral position. So my question to him would be, by what standard are you saying that these things are now good, that homosexual behavior and the LGBTQ goals are all good and same-sex marriage is good? Regardless of the merits of it, why do you think it's good now? I mean, if there's no God, there's nothing good or bad. Everything's just a matter of opinion. So how are you now coming up with this new moral standard? Where does it come from? Look, you can either trust the sinless Jesus or you can trust the sinless culture. Those are the only two choices you have. You can trust the sinless Jesus or your sinful self and the sinful culture. Where are you going to stand? I think Jesus really did exist and really did rise from the dead and really is God. And so if therefore I'm going to trust him, and if that's all true, then we have a grounding for right and wrong. If that's not true, then there's no grounding for right or wrong anywhere, unless there's some other God out there we don't know about.
So, Frank, let me ask you this. How are we even supposed to think about a case like Joshua Harris? I mean, you know, he's a best-selling author. He was a pastor. His first book sold over 1 million copies. Yeah. How do you get – and he had this huge influence, for better or for worse, with the whole thing about courtship and all of that. How do you get from where he started to where he is today? And how are we even supposed to think? I mean, are we supposed to say he was never a Christian at all, was faking it the whole time? And I realize there's probably things about this story that are going to come out that haven't come out yet, but – help us out, Frank. How are we supposed to think about this?
And you've got 60 seconds. Frank.
Yeah. Well, let me just reference something Al Mohler wrote on August 1st, because he mentions that, and he would say, given the fact that when Jesus says in John 5:24, and this is me speaking now, not Mohler, when he says, "He who believes is passed from death into life," I think Jesus is saying that when you believe, you get eternal life. And if it's eternal, by definition, you can't lose it. In other words, once saved, always saved. Now, Christians debate that. I get it. But yeah, maybe he never truly was a saved, born-again believer. And maybe that's where he is now. I don't know him personally, so I can only go by what he's written. And by what he's written, I see no evidence that he now, at one point, believed Jesus had risen from the dead, and now he doesn't think Jesus. He doesn't say any of that. He's just saying that now he gets to basically choose what's right and wrong morally for himself. That's what it appears to me. It appears that Christianity for him was just a preference. That's all it was. Wow. It's a preference.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I think we could all agree that whatever your perspective on this, you mentioned once saved, always saved, that Joshua Harris is in spiritual peril.
Yes.
Very great
spiritual
danger, and we should be praying. And so is his family. We should be praying for him. But your point is well taken, as usual, Frank, that Christians had better get about the business of understanding what they believe and why they believe it. Mm-hmm. All right, Frank, tell our listeners, I think they're going to be very interested to hear your podcast on this subject from last weekend, but where they can go to get that kind of information.
Yeah, they can get it on our app, Cross-Examined app, two words in the App Store, Cross-Examined. They get it on iTunes. It's the I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist podcast. They can see it there or hear it there. And then this weekend, we're going to be talking a little bit about these shootings and some other questions we've gotten from listeners.
All right, Frank, thank you so much for being on with us.
Thanks, guys. God bless. See you.
All right, 2-minute break for a couple of house cleaning issues, and we'll be right back.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
As we talk about this, and of course I'm going to go to the political implications because I have to, we cannot forget that there are people in deep mourning who just suddenly had their loved ones taken from them over the weekend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, one of the days that we're in Israel on our March tour, we will be going to Bethlehem. Now, when we go to Bethlehem, we'll be visiting what's called the Church of the Nativity. And the Church of the Nativity is over the place where Jesus Christ was born. And so we're going to be seeing that very place and experiencing the place where Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem. And then later, we'll be seeing the shepherd's fields later that same day. So it's going to be a wonderful time. That's just one day in our trip to Israel. For more information on this March 12th through the 20th trip to the Holy Land, go to our website, twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. President Trump calls out white supremacy. That story next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ at liberty.edu/starnes.
President Trump delivered an impassioned speech to the nation on Monday, condemning those responsible for domestic terrorist attacks in Texas and Ohio.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America.
But instead of affirming the president's words, Democrats and the mainstream media attacked, accusing the president of stoking racial division and promoting white supremacy. To be clear, the president is neither a racist nor a white supremacist, and his vow to secure the border and deport illegal aliens is not a sign of hatred. It's a sign he wants to protect this nation and her people. It's about defending American sovereignty. If you want to come to America, do it legally. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News Commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined by Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now, and Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries. Well, most Tuesdays we have the privilege of not only having Frank Turek on in our first segment, but in our second segment, a radio rock star, just like saying radio rock star, Sandy Rios, AFA Director of Governmental Affairs, host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard on AFR Talk each weekday morning from 7:05 to 8 a.m. Central. I always listen to Sandy on the way into work to find out what's happened overnight. And the only time I don't is when my wife's in the car. She does not like radio of any sort. I don't even get to listen to music. It's too loud. It's too loud. But Sandy, you're part of the regular diet when I'm on the way to work. So welcome back to Today's Issues.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Ed.
That's all right. You can call me
You're
Ray.
Welcome.
You're welcome. Call me Fred.
That's
doesn't
really
matter.
Funny.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say, that is the highest compliment. It truly, truly is. You know, when I have good friends, and I have a few, I've had a few through the years, I always tell them, you know, listening to the show that I do every day is not a prerequisite to friendship. I don't grill them on what they heard or what I say. You know, I separate that. But when they do choose to listen, our family members, I feel like that's the highest compliment because they know me and they could listen to other people, you know?
Well, and we trust you. I mean, that's a big part of what we want to to build on American Family Radio Talk is that our listeners trust us, and we always try to get the story straight, and you do, and you always have great guests, a lot of insight, a lot of information that I really don't get anywhere else, certainly don't at night, you know, even on Fox News a lot of times. So anyway, thank you for being with us. I know you're very busy, and listen, we had a couple things we wanted to talk to you about, if we can fit those in. We know you have limited time. Fred, we wanted to kind of pick up on some of the things that we had been talking about, that everyone's been talking about since the tragic shootings this weekend. What is it you want to...
Well, it's kind of sad, but I guess we should have expected it, and a lot of us did, that in the wake of the horrible tragedies in El Paso and Dayton over the weekend, that President Trump's political enemies would try to make hay from that and would turn it into, it's all the president's fault because he's a racist. Now, to give you an example of what some of these Democrats have been saying, here's a little montage of Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Beto O'Rourke. And this is what they have to say about President Trump, linking him to what happened in these tragedies. Cut number five.
The policy of this administration amounts to nothing but an onslaught on decent Americans and citizens and those who are seeking to be citizens.
Stop your anti-immigrant rhetoric. Stop the hatred.
It was fueled by hate. And no, Mr. President, as he said after Charlottesville, there are not two sides to an issue when the other side is the Ku Klux Klan and white nationalists. There is only one side, and that side is what unites us.
The actions that follow cannot surprise us. And anyone who is surprised is part of this problem right now, including members of the media who ask, hey, Beto, do you think the president is racist? So of course he's racist.
So there you have it.
Listen, was that Kamala Harris, the one
female before? Voice? Yeah. Yes.
Okay, Sandy, we're going to turn you loose on this here in just a second. But let me just say that lie, and that was a bald-faced lie, talking about Charlottesville, and anybody who may be ignorant of that fact. You probably do have a good excuse, and that is because the news media has continued. He never said the Ku Klux Klan or white supremacists were part of the group he said were good people. Just never said that, but that lie continues to be spread by the news media and by the Democrats. All right, Sandy, I don't want to take up your time with my own rants. Why don't you respond to some of these Democratic candidates?
Well, first of all, could I just say how dangerous this is? I mean, this is so dangerous, and I will repeat what's become my mantra. We are being propagandized, and the rhetoric is getting more and more heated. And while they are accusing President Trump of being responsible for all this heated rhetoric, it's what they are doing. They're ramping it up, and they're stirring people into a frenzy. That's what they're doing. Let me just say that, you know, Bernie Sanders says, you need to stop all this anti-immigrant rhetoric. You know, anti-immigrant is not, it's illegal immigration, Bernie. Right. I'm sure you don't know the difference. It's just an accident that you said that. But what country, name one on the globe that is not concerned about people illegally coming into their country? Every country that I know of, Mexico, has incredibly strict laws about that. And so it's just, every country has borders, except now in Europe. And Europe is in big trouble because they've stopped, you know, honoring their borders. They've been invaded also. And so it's anti-illegal immigration rhetoric, and it's about illegal immigration, not about the people themselves. That's very different. Just because, you know, and I always say to people, when it comes to immigrants or people you suspect are illegal here who maybe don't speak English, or maybe wearing clothing that doesn't look like it's from here, or they're in transition. I think as individual, I'll speak as Christians now, individual Christians, it's up to us to be kind to them.
Right.
And if they need help, we help them. I don't mean to do illegal things. I just mean if they're hungry, if they need, you know, I feel that's part of our commission. But as a country, that's different. We know from Romans 13 that the law, the way the country's governed is different than the way we as individual Christians are governed, and our government is established by God to establish order. So the order requires that countries have boundaries and that people can't just flood in and bring in drugs or commit crime. Not that they're all doing that, but some are. Or you can even, at the most innocent, come in without permission and start taking the resources that belong to the people of that country. I just think that, you know, that's, of course, it stirs people up because it's very inexact, but that's what Bernie Sanders said. And then, of course, you talked about Charlottesville, and we know that that was a convergence of several different groups of people.
Right.
The only ones that got the airtime or attention were the white supremacists, and I think there were there was not that many of them there. And then there was Antifa, and then there was the guy who had worked for Obama who was organizing the whole thing, right, under the guise of being some sort of a conservative. It was a manufactured disaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a success for them, but a disaster for the people of Charlottesville. And it was a merger of communists. One of the girl that was killed by that car, I don't think anybody ever established that was a purposeful murder. But that girl was a communist. She had come, I think, from St. Louis to participate in that. So there was a convergence, and there were a lot of people there who wanted to protect the memories of the Civil War statues, and they did not want them to be torn down. They wanted to hang on to their heritage, and they just innocently went to represent that viewpoint. And so it was a disaster, but it's not what the media has portrayed it. And so now they're, of course, exploiting that too. So they are trying to stir up hatred, and successfully so, toward not just President Trump, but by people who support him. And we see that it's being very effective, because look at the people that are being attacked, beaten for wearing MAGA hats. That's been going on since he was inaugurated.
That's right. And if there's anyone who's going to be blamed, and we're going to change subjects here in just a second, but if there's anyone's going to be blamed for increasing violence, I would think, okay, fine, you want to blame the president. I know that's part of the political game. But the Democrats have actually been calling for violent confrontations. They're the ones who have said, listen, you know, if you find someone from the administration in a restaurant, confront them,
mm-hmm, exactly,
you know, form a group, push back. All these mm-hmm. kinds of things have been coming from the left.
That's
but
right.
I just think our listeners should understand that framing the president as a racist is going to be at least one of the main talking points of the Democrats in the lead up to the 2020 election, both for the White House and for on down the ballot. That's just what you heard Beto O'Rourke say, that anyone who supports the president is a racist too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That is going to be the argument that is going to be made. And going forward, that's going to be what we hear over and over and over again. All right,
hey,
Fred,
Ed, let me interject something just very quickly. And I would ask rhetorically, how many killings or attacks have we heard of Americans on illegal immigrants in this country? Mm. How many attacks across the nation, in spite of the fact that there are tens of thousands of them flooding in, how many Americans have been reported as attacking or hurting them in any way? And if that had happened, you can bet it would be headline news.
That's correct.
All right. That is really good.
Fred, before we let Sandy go, there was another subject we wanted to talk
about. Sandy, your comments, there have been, I think I heard this morning, roughly 11 Republicans who in the House who say they're not going to run again, three or four of them from Texas. What's your read on that? Is this a sign of something alarming, that they think that it's going to be a disaster next year, or what are you hearing?
Well, what I'm hearing is that if these three particular, or however many there might be more, are leaving, that's actually good for us.
Okay.
It's good for us if we can get people who really love the country and are willing to fight in their place. If we can't replace them, and if the left comes in and takes those seats, then it's bad. But the loss of those particular candidates is no great loss. You know, I always think, this happens all the time, I hear a congressman's name and I go, who? What? And I always think, if I haven't heard their name, they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything. And so we need champions in there right now. We need men and women who will fight. The ones that are retiring, obviously, are not willing to do that, so they need to go. and they need to be replaced by fighters. Then that would be good news.
Okay. Ray, anything you want to ask before we let...
So Sandy, is Texas going purple? We discussed this yesterday. Is the great state of Texas slipping away from the Republican side of the column?
I think from all statistics, yes, Ray. I think I'm not saying it's the final diagnosis, but you could see in the Ted Cruz Beto O'Rourke matchup that Texas had changed a lot. And we also know that under Barack Obama, lots of Obama acolytes, and I do mean lots. I remember, one of the black operatives who used to be with Acorn, Anita. I think of her last name. I got to know Anita pretty well. She let us know that many of the people on the far left, they had gone down there fully funded, and their purpose was to turn Texas blue. And they've been working down there now for, I want to say, 5 years, probably at least, behind the scenes, trying to do everything they can, whether it's register voters in every way they can, and probably knowing the types of people Anita was describing, probably some illegal things too. And so, yeah, I think they're having good success. And with the border just being out of control, and with the all the lax rules on voter ID and when you get your driver's license, yeah, I think inevitably it's going to turn blue, unless, and only God really could make this happen, but we do know that there are a lot of Hispanic people, of course, Americans, who, native-born Americans, but also coming over the border, who really do love family, and if they really knew what the left was doing in terms of transgenderism and abortion and all of that, if they had something in their language, they would be on our side. So you just never know. I mean, you just never know. Sometimes I find, you know, that wonderful passage about how man meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. I find God just really just doing things that we cannot see sometimes. Like I think of that recent poll from... the pro-LGBT polling, Harris, it was Harris poll. Yeah, and said that what, millennials are 28%, their support for the LGBT movement has gone down like 28% since 2016. I'm pulling that out of the hat because I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, no, it was three straight years it had declined.
Yeah, so only God could, it isn't because we've been so effective. I really don't think, I wish I'd like to say, it's because we are so articulate and we've been so effective, but I really don't think so. I think that's God working to bring truth. And so I'm not giving up.
I would say this. Has anyone else noticed that God seems to always be ahead of us? Have you guys noticed that?
I picked up on that.
Always kind of ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
He seems to know what's happening even before it happens. I don't know. It's just been my observation. Maybe I'm just alone on that. But
thinking the battle is the Lord's. Now, I hesitate to say that because I think this is very politically incorrect. All the Calvinists go, yes, I know. That's why I do nothing. But I think.
Thank you for throwing that discussion.
Our face, our Facebook just lit up.
That's right. It exploded.
I'll put it a different way. All those Christians who believe that God's in control of everything and they don't need to do anything will be happy to hear me say that. But see, I don't think that's the way it works. But the battle is the Lord's.
We're going to let you go here, Sandy.
See you next month.
Before you bring up mode of baptism. Tongues and
that's
women
next.
In the pulpit. All right. Sandy Rios, AFA Director of Governmental Affairs, host of Sandy Rios in the Morning. Folks, you should check her out on AFR Talk each weekday morning from 7:05 to 8 a.m. Central Time. Sandy, thank you once again for all you do.
Bye. My pleasure, you guys. Great to talk to you always.
Okay. All right, so those of you who disagreed with what Sandy said, we will provide her email address here shortly.
That's right.
So, we do try to stay away from those kinds of doctrinal squabbles because take it up with your pastor.
No, call Exploring the Word.
Or call
That's right.
Exploring
That's right.
the Word, Because what Bert does, Bert Harper, is he, when he gets one of those questions, he says, Alex?
What do you think?
What do you think? AFA, that's and right. That means AFR, we do take a Christian perspective, but those kinds of controversial issues, that is a church matter. We stay away from those because it's more properly handled by the entity that God created to handle it, which is the church and your church leadership. Does that sound okay, Ray, in terms of how we handle it?
Hey, it's okay. She was evidently predestined to say that. So there you go.
Thank you, Ray, for bringing it up.
Thank you. Thanks for my support, right?
All right. What, do we have any other news items to talk about here before
the
break?
Well, yeah. You know, some of the Democrat presidential candidates, the wannabes.
Yeah.
Well,
only 24.
I'm just trying to think. I think almost all of them, maybe not Joe. But they're promising people the world.
Oh, yeah, free stuff.
Free everything.
Free stuff, baby.
And one of the things that they're recommending is $15 minimum wage. I mean, that's it. You're a 16-year-old, get your first job at McDonald's, $15 an hour for you.
Right.
Yeah, who cares if your Happy Meal goes up to $15? You know, what the heck? You know, the American people, they'll support you.
Right.
They'll pay you for that. All right, so let's start off with all of those candidates have been talking about $15 minimum wage. Going to hear the voices of Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, and Cory Booker. Then you're going to hear Stuart Varney from Fox News talking about why $15 is kind of bad for young people and the poor. Here we go, cut eight.
Long past time. We have a $15 federal minimum wage.
We need to raise the minimum wage to at least $15 an hour.
We have got to raise that minimum wage to $15 an hour.
A minimum wage that is a living wage, winning that fight for 15.
It's terrible for youngsters. How do you climb up the ladder if you can't get on the bottom rung? Not all jobs should pay $30,000 a year right from the get-go. What about entry-level jobs? You can't entry at $30,000 a year. We will never know the names of the youngsters who fail to get on that lower rung of the ladder because there's no jobs available for them at that right price.
So what we got here is we got the Democrat candidates in pretenzi world.
Yes.
Here's something I'll say to get your vote. And then we have people like Stuart Varney. But beyond Stuart Varney, we also have now proof of the negative impact of $15 minimum wage. Now, we told you a couple of weeks ago about the big restaurant chain on the West Coast
right. That
had to shut down because Seattle brought in a $15 minimum wage. And lo and behold, they said, we can't do this.
Right.
We can't afford to pay everybody $15 minimum wage because some people have been there for 10 years. They want $20
right. And
$25. So they had to shut down the whole restaurant.
And
chain.
By the way, let me just quickly interject there. In that particular example, the restaurant, the owner was saying, listen, we can't pay our staff all $15 an hour and up, so we can pay some people that, but not enough to staff the restaurant.
That was
the choice they had to make. Yeah. So I wanted to explain why they went out.
All right. Reality check number two comes from that bastion of liberalism, New York.
Yes.
All right. Here's a story out of the Wall Street Journal. More than 6 months after the $15 minimum wage went into effect in New York City, business Todd Stern says.
Right.
New York City. Business leaders and owners say the increased labor costs have forced them to cut staff, eliminate work shifts, and raise prices. Who saw it coming?
Who
saw it coming? Many business owners said these changes were unintended consequences of the new minimum wage, which took effect at the beginning of the year. So there you have it. There you have it, these Democrat presidential wannabes saying $15, it's time, it's got to happen. But then you have the reality check out there, potential voters in 2020. Here's what's happened when the $15 minimum wage is put into law. Seattle, New York City, business owners have to say to employees, I'm sorry, I got to let you go.
Those is West Coast and East Coast, big cities. Ray, let me just ask you this. I mean, there's the way the real world works, and then there's the way that some people wish the world worked. Let me give you an example. When my daughter was young, I don't remember how old she was, 7, 8 years old, she wanted something and asked for it, and her mother said, "I'm sorry, sweetie, we can't afford that right now." And my daughter, Lindsay, said, she says, "Well, you've got checks in your checkbook. Just write a check." Not understanding the way the world works, that just because you have checks in the checkbook doesn't mean you have money in the account to back that up if you write it. To me, that seems exactly the way these Democrat candidates for president are behaving. Am I being unfair?
No, not at all. I think the most interesting part of that montage is one of those candidates, and I can't remember which one, said it ought to be at least $15. It sounds to me like before this campaign is over, we're going to have a bidding war. Somebody's going to say 17, somebody's going to say 18. Pretty soon it's going to be 20 or 25. And if you're going to, why stop there, guys? Why not go to 30 or 40 to 50? So there's no end to that. Once you start raising the minimum wage, somebody's always going to want more money.
Well, it's economics 101 here. I mean, if you take the basic economics course during university in your freshman year or whatever the case may be, people go into business to make money. I mean, that's not a terrible thing. That's the motivation.
Right.
When you start a business. And in business, my dad had a business. He was in the menswear business. He owned a store all his life. And you have to have what's called a profit margin.
Right.
You know, you have your expenses. You take into account your expenses. And then you put a price on your goods that, you know, people in that area can afford to buy whatever the product is. And that you still have some money to take home and feed your family.
Right. And perhaps reinvest in your business to
expand.
Upgrade your equipment, that kind of thing.
But if you can't do that, if you have to start paying a minimum wage of $15 to everybody, including the 17-year-old that's just starting out in life, then that profit margin shrinks to the point where the person in business says, "I can't stay in business.
Right.
I'm sorry, I have to let you all go." I mean, that's a reality.
Or they have to keep their labor costs at about the same amount, so you have to pay that $15 an hour to fewer people.
Yeah.
And then you have to ask yourself, do I have enough people to run the business?
Yeah. Or the thing is, I have to start raising my prices of my product.
Yes.
Well, you do that, and then the consumer says, "Well, I can't afford it."
Yeah, even I can understand this, Ray. And listen, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to start a business. I can understand exactly what happened in Seattle and New York City. Why can't these on the left understand that?
You know, in the end, the government is not going to be the one paying the minimum wage. Hmm. It's going to be the employer, right?
Yeah.
And who is going to, where's he going to get the money from? Eventually, it's going to get passed back to the consumer. We're always the ones who get stuck with the bill for great ideas like the minimum wage. We're the ones who end up paying 15% more, 20% more, 30% more. Pretty soon, we price ourselves out of the market. We can't even afford to go to McDonald's because the prices are just too high.
Well, and I will say this. The first category of businesses it hurts are mom and pop, small business owners. The big companies, they can weather some of these kinds of shifts. They can help franchise owners and stuff with a little bit of leeway here and there, special deals. But the first ones that feel it are the small business owners. All right, look, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news, folks, and we will come back. Steve Jordahl will be joining us with more news on what's happening both here and abroad. Fred Jackson has been with us. Thank you, Fred.
Great to be here.
Folks, again, 5-minute break for news. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.